As a reminder, we will have our first Hoop Collective live show Friday, December 8th in Las Vegas at the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club at the Link right there on the Strip. Link for tickets, bit.ly/WendyHoopVegas. That's the link. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Sunday evening. Joining us from New York City, the Upper West Side, not alone in his apartment tonight, Tim Bontos.
That is true. My wife is here. Also, Ben McMahon took so long writing after this game tonight. I should have gone to Barclays Center after being at Madison Square Garden to see the wreckage of the latest just disastrous Bulls loss, where it appears the Bulls have had another team meeting of some sorts after getting annihilated by the Brooklyn Nets in the second quarter. So
I think the
good
Bulls
times
have
in
lost.
New York.
I think the Bulls have lost seven of their last eight. Yes, Bontemps and McMahon were at the Garden today for the Suns' thrilling victory over the New York Knicks, one at 1 second left. So that means in the next room over, in the seat normally occupied for this podcast by Tim Bontemps. I'm just going to say, McMahon, when I podcasted there earlier this year and I was visiting, I was not afforded the Bontemps seat. I was expelled to the backup podcast position. But joining us from New York City, not yet banned from Tim Bontemps' residence, is Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. I'm just glad that Bontemps complained about me taking my time, making sure we got things right. You know, you understand why Bontemps' copy looks like it does now. He acts like he's on a freaking newspaper deadline for a 6 p.m. tip. But no, this is my maiden voyage to the Bontemps' residence. And I found a treasure, boys. I found a treasure. Look at this, folks.
That's right.
This is an official Brian Windhorst Topps card, autographed.
Autographed. Right. Collector's item.
Being the reporter that I am, I did a little bit of digging, and I found out that Wendy has a box full of these things that I believe I'm in the process of talking him to bringing to Las Vegas for our live show. What is that? December 8th, Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club, all that kind of good stuff. I'm pretty sure if you buy a ticket to the live show, in addition to the dinner and the merch and all that, you will get an autographed Brian Wendy Windhorst.
Top, I didn't say card. They were all autographed.
But they will be. Because you'll just take that little Sharpie and scribble away. And look, this is the good stuff. This is back when Wendy was a common man. You see that buzz cut? Ain't no product on this thing.
The quaff.
Ain't no product on this thing.
Yeah, I was very honored. I don't know, it was probably 5 or 6 years ago, Topps made a card with me on it. And one of the remarkable things I got to do was they had like a representative from Topps come to a hotel I was at. I think it was during the playoffs. I was in Chicago. I think I was covering a Bulls Heat playoff series. Sorry.
Man, so long ago, the Bulls were in the playoffs?
No, it was a Bulls-Cavs playoff series. It was a long time ago. It was definitely a Bulls game. And they brought, you know, this, first off, I had to give an artifact that would be cut up and put into cards. So no, not that particular card, the special edition of them.
I don't see any artifact.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't give Bontemps that. I actually never even got one of those. So,
Hold on.
What artifact did you? I'm more curious about what artifact you cut up for these cards.
Well,
what was that?
I will just say that years ago, when he's on his first run with the Cavs, one time LeBron did an interview with me where he was doing a signing for Upper Deck. Like, I guess I don't know how many times a year, but a few times a year, Upper Deck. You know, LeBron's been with Upper Deck for 20 years. They would just bring a whole bunch of memorabilia and he would sign them. There's a whole thing with LeBron's signature. Like he signs his signature a couple of different ways. And if he gives like the King logo, it's like more meaningful to him and it's worth more, whatever. But anyway, I remember being there when like the Upper Deck memorabilia guy had like all these shoes and all these cards and all these, you know, jerseys and everything, and watching this guy go through the process of preserving of each individual signature. And, you know, he had to make sure, you know, you can't afford like one to get smudged, or you can't afford like the pen to run, you know, a little bit dry. So like the process that they would have. And there was like a camera on the pen to like help verify it. So that was really an amazing thing that I got to witness. And this was a long time ago. Who knows what the technology is now that they use. So when Topps came to do with me, I didn't get any of that stuff, but there was a guy there from Topps who was certifying that I was actually autographing it. You didn't get one of those certified one bond temps. I must have just autographed
that. Might
one
have been a phony. This might be a phony.
It could be a phony. There's a market for that. There actually is a market for that. Even to this day, I get cards at my house that people want me to sign and send back. They send them back with a, within the last 2 weeks, I got one, as a matter of fact, which I haven't signed.
Hey, if you want a card, come on out to Vegas.
Yeah. We'll find them like scattered under the chairs after the show's over is what's going to happen.
Well, good. Then I'll collect them all and put them on eBay the next week.
To answer Bontem's question, I gave the tie that I was wearing on set when we announced that LeBron was coming back to Cleveland, because I had nothing else I could think of that had any interest, which I bought the day
before. Did you have that like frame somewhere? How did you know which one it was?
I mean, I just knew which one it was because I bought it at Target. Because
sir, that's pronounced Target.
Because I had been in Bristol for like 13 consecutive days because remember that LeBron thing like stretched all the way out to like July 9th and he opted out like June 26th or something. And I was summoned to Bristol and I was just there for days and days and days on end. And I'd worn every tie I had with me. And there isn't a selection of menswear places in Bristol, Connecticut, but there is a Target. And I went to Target and literally bought like the four ties that they had. And that was one of them. So it wasn't hard to part with, but I did give somewhere out there. I don't know if they ever did it because I didn't get one, but somewhere out there, there is cards, I believe, with cut up, you know, like they cut up.
Yeah.
It's a little embarrassing, right?
Like game jerseys or whatever. Right,
they cut up Victor Wembanyama's jersey. They cut up LeBron's jersey. They cut up my tie, supposedly. I mean, I gave it to them. So.
I should also clarify, since I said it earlier, the Bulls players just voiced frustration after the game. Did not have a team meeting, just to clarify. We got to have our facts straight.
Those team meetings with the Bulls tend to be sticky subjects. Got to make sure that's real clear.
Well, I didn't want to misrepresent our guy Casey Johnson's tweet, so that's all. But good times in Chicago, as always.
I was in Chicago last week, and nobody was having a good time.
Suns are having good times.
You guys were today at... Phoenix Suns, Devin Booker hit a shot with a second left. I didn't see any post-game quotes, so you guys will have to enlighten me. I can't believe that was the design of the play.
Oh, it was. Because they knew that a double
But he
team...
took the shot from a spot where no one would almost ever practice.
I wouldn't say that.
Listen, the design of the play was essentially they're going to double, right? They're going to send a second defender at Booker. He's going to get off the ball, and they talked about different ways to get the ball back to him. But it was basically get the ball back in his hands and give him a chance to get a shot up. They felt like any shot that Book could get up would be a good shot. Despite the fact he was only 9 of 24 before he took that shot. He didn't have a great shooting night. He played a great floor game, another great assist to turnover game. I think 11 assists, 2 turnovers. But, you know, no KD again tonight. He went through a pretty intense pregame workout. There was still some foot soreness, so he sat the second straight night. So basically it was get the ball back to Book. He's going to get a shot up. Hopefully it goes in and we win this game.
Yeah, I'm sure that they wanted Booker to shoot it, but I'm just saying where he shot it from, I can't believe he was his preference. It was like
I don't think it was that weird. It was the exact same spot on the court right in front of the Knicks bench at the elbow where Jimmy Butler put up his attempt at a game-winning three. The other night, a little bit of a different play because Book went and got the ball, but I thought it was a pretty normal action for him to get it and get the shot there. Thought the Knicks did a pretty good job of contesting it. There was some debate about Julius Randle's contest. I thought his contest on the shot was fine. Booker was falling out of bounds. I mean, you could argue it's a rhythm shot for him, but still a really difficult shot. And a great player made a great play, which is more or less what the Knicks said after the game. The much bigger issue on the Knicks side was for a team that is sort of the ultimate try-hard team and is a team of lunch pail guys, they were pretty disappointed that the Suns, without Kevin Durant, without Bradley Beal, basically just outworked them for the vast majority of the game. And, you know, as Tom Thibodeau said post-game, we were playing with fire all night, and they got burned on the last play of the game by a great player. But the game should not have come down to Devin Booker having a shot to win it. I mean, the Suns played well, but
I've actually seen Booker live hit a game winner from pretty close to that same spot on the floor.
It was in Dallas. I'll surrender.
It was a little higher on the wing, but it was in Dallas. The year there were no fans in the stands. It was one of those games, and that was a perfectly executed play where CP3 had the ball, I believe, down on the right side of the floor. Ayton set a screen. Booker came off the screen, going to the right wing. Got the pass, knocked it down. I remember Chris Paul saying, he talked about it was an old Doc Rivers play from the Clippers that Monty took in Colorado at that time. But this one, he talked with Jordan Goodwin before, they talked in the huddle and basically said, hey, if you get the pass on the right wing, look the defense off and then come give me the dribble handoff. And it was, get the dribble handoff, one dribble, two dribbles, a little bit of space, let the thing fly. And he told me, he says, for a game winner, I'm feeling like I'm taking that shot unless they super blitz me to where I can't even see the hoop. Any soft pressure like that, I feel like if I raise up and I have it on my right side, that nobody can really get to it. I know it sounds crazy, but it feels like an open shot. So he was awfully happy with it. He was also ecstatic to hit a game winner in Madison Square Garden. He's a guy who appreciates the history of the game and looks forward to Madison Square Garden every year. Didn't get to play here last year. That was one of the games that he missed. And, told me he feels like he's part of history now that he hit a game winner in Madison Square Garden.
Well, when Durant was a scratch, I thought maybe there was a chance that the Suns would lose this game, because when Durant has played against the Knicks, he has not lost in a decade. The last time he played in a game where his team lost to the Knicks was in 2013. But the Suns have now won 7 straight games. They are 7-2 on the road so far this season. And that has kept them in a good position despite all their injury woes.
Well, the 7-game streak started when Booker came back from the calf strain after he missed, I forgot how many games in a row, with that injury. Like, Booker comes back and they're world beaters. And look, KD lit it up in those first 5 games. Booker's been phenomenal the whole time. Then they go to Memphis, and let's be honest, it's not hard to win in Memphis now. So they go to Memphis, KD sits that one, and you're like, okay. So KD's a scratch in this one, and the Knicks are a solid team. So this was a really big one for the Suns to be able to pull this one out with KD wearing sweats on the sideline.
Well, and the Suns are, by the way, 8-1 with Booker in the lineup this season. The only game they lost was that game against the Spurs when Victor had the game of his season, and they won their second game. Spurs have not won since.
That's crazy.
And the Suns have not lost with Devin Booker since.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, we talked about some of the moves they made this summer and having to kind of, go through the bargain bins. And we said it at the time, but tonight was another reminder. Eric Gordon on a minimum contract is unbelievable value. I mentioned they were blitzing Booker the whole game, making it tough on him. He was picking him apart with the passing, but was struggling to get clean looks. And Gordon had 25 points, 9-13 shooting, just lit it up. Frank Vogel talked about, we have stars, but Gordon's really the guy who kind of gives our offense swag, is the way that he put it. The Suns got a little something cooking. They're not a perfect team. They've got some concerns that we've hit on. The fact that Bradley Beal still hasn't played a second with Devin Booker in the regular season, and we don't know when he will, to me is concerning. I asked Booker about that, and he doesn't think there's going to be any adjustment when Beal comes back. Basically says, hey, he'll fit right in with KD and me. We're all 3-level scorers. We all know how to move the ball, et cetera, et cetera. I think the adjustment when Beal comes back is going to be more. Obviously, Beal's going to have to figure out how he fits, but also it will be guys like Eric Gordon. Like, what's the rotation going to look like? Where are their minutes going to come? But again, that we're still weeks away from all that. They're awfully good just with Booker, KD, and the supporting cast.
So Booker's missed 8 games. Durant's missed 2. I think Beal's missed about 14 of their 17 games. I don't think he's played in three games.
I think he's played twice. I'll look right now while you're talking.
All right. My point is they've missed all their guys, some, including some big chunks. And they're fifth. They're still fifth in the league in offense, which just tells you right there what kind of firepower you're dealing with. And believe it or not, they're 18th in defense, which is better than I thought they would be. And well, that could potentially improve.
Well, I mean, it could.
Well, they're all brand new playing with each other. I would figure you give them another 20 games, you'd give them a fighting chance to improve their defense.
Maybe, but adding Bradley Beal to the mix absolutely makes a potent offense even more potent. I mean, it, you know, you said it on TV. This might be the best offense statistically in NBA history when everything shakes out. And we'll see. That's still a positive. Whoever has the best offense in the league this year will have the best offense in NBA history.
That's right.
Exactly, going out on a limb. Right now, the Pacers are like miles ahead.
Bontemps, you told me the other day, I don't know if it's held through the Pacers' last couple of games, but you told me the other day that the Pacers had achieved the status, this incredible status, where they had the number one offensive rating in NBA history and the number DFL, the worst defensive rating in the history of the NBA. They had both. Oh, you told me that, McMahon?
I told you.
Well, whatever it was.
It was, we were talking about it in our chat. They have improved to 28th. Tie for 28th with Charlotte.
Yeah.
Six tenths of a point ahead of the Wizards, who have the worst, the DFL defense of all time. So
the Wizards are going to be a tough team to beat out for the worst defense of all time. I'm pretty confident saying that. But,
Pacers still 4 points better than second place Atlanta per 100 possessions in offense.
Yeah. The Suns actually tied for fourth now in offense. 118 per 100 possessions, tied with their Christmas guest, the Dallas Mavericks. But bringing Beal back.
By the way, real quick on the Wizards, because we'll never ever talk about them. Mm-hmm. They've lost 9 games in a row. That's bad. That's only the third longest losing streak currently going in the NBA.
Pistons
have 13. The Spurs have 12 after losing tonight.
Wow. Yeah.
Victor had like 22-11, like 4 steals and 3 blocks, though. Whatever that's worth to anybody. Sorry, I ruined your run. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I was just saying, bringing Beal back ain't going to make the defense better. We'll make the offense better defensively. And it'll be interesting to see like how small they're willing to play. You know, I think Eric Gordon is going to be playing the 3 a lot, right? I think they'll be playing a lot of 3-guard lineups. And then it's like they're already not a great rebounding team. But, man, they're so potent offensively. They just have to be decent defensively to have a chance to be a contender. They don't have to be a great defensive team. If they're an average defensive team, they're going to be an extremely tough out if their top 2 guys are healthy. Honestly, Beal's a bonus. Huge, huge, huge number for a bonus. And long-term concerns with that salary and that contract. But I think you can almost look at Bradley Beal as a bonus star for this team, because there's not a more potent duo than Booker and KD. And KD is having his best season as a scorer. It's insane what he's doing.
Yeah, and I think you can actually even say their defense has maybe been goosed a little bit by the injuries they've had, because they were playing Kevin out there with some very defense-heavy lineups, and he was having to try to carry these groups along. Which also wasn't sustainable. They need to have their guys. But yeah, like the 2 questions we had about this team were, are they going to be able to guard? So far, the answer is not really, at least to the level where they need to be. And are their guys going to be healthy? So far, the answer to that has been they're not. So, you know, there's still a lot of time for those things to change, but we're 20% of the way through the season and their 3 guys have played 0 games together. That is obviously a cause for concern.
By the way, Jalen Brunson. Go ahead.
Sorry, I misspoke. This is KD's averaging 31.4 would be his second highest scoring season. Highest since the last of his 4 scoring titles that he had in OKC.
I thought he was going to win 10 straight scoring titles, but you know, he's hunted to play with some stars and had to share the ball, but he probably could have.
He easily could have. He's never wanted to do that. Like he's never been a guy to, he could have scored 40 a game if he wanted to, but he's just never.
By the way, the other day he played his 1,000th game. And he had more point through 1,000 games than LeBron did.
Yeah.
Now, because of all the injuries, he's never going to reach the numbers, but his scoring rate was higher than the all-time leading scorer through 1,000 games.
Yeah, I thought for a long time he's the most complete scorer ever, just because he could do everything on offense, and he does it all.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
I actually made a bet over beers with a longtime Dallas scribe, Eddie Sefko, years ago at the Prince of Wales Bar, I believe, in the Southern California area. And we bet $1,000.
That's a little higher than we see from sports writers.
That was not what I was expecting to hear with a bet with you and Eddie.
Well, I said over beers. And the beers were about as high as Booker's assist tonight, I believe.
Good God.
But I bet that KD would pass Kareem on the all-time scoring list. And I did word it like that.
Wow.
Because I thought LeBron would too. I got that bet. I got it reduced the next day to 100.
He's not bringing that up now.
No, Eddie let me off the hook.
Reminding everybody of it, unless that bet was renegotiated.
Yeah, Eddie let me off the hook. It's down to 100. I don't think I'll get there, but you never know. I mean, hey, KD ain't slowing down.
So LeBron hit 39,000 points the other day. And I reminded me that, you know, all the way through, whenever he hit 1,000 point threshold, 5,000, 8,000, 14,000, 18,000, he was always the youngest player to ever do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be an easy story you would write, you know, there'd be some, you know, mid-January game in Minnesota that wasn't otherwise interesting. But hey, LeBron hit 16,000 points, youngest to ever do it. It occurred to me he's also the youngest to hit 39,000.
Well, and he'll be the youngest to hit every single 1,000-point mark that's ever been hit.
Right.
Because now and maybe forever.
Right. Well, you know, because, you know, well, no one else. He's also the oldest to hit 39,000. Anyway, real quick, Jalen Brunson hit a shot with 20 seconds left in this game that tied the game up. It was another clutch shot. He had a 35-point game with 6 rebounds and 8 assists that will be forgotten. He's been on a real hot streak recently. I think he scored over 30 in 3 of his last 5 games.
I honestly thought that the 3 he got up a desperation like 32 footer at the buzzer. I thought that thing was going in.
It looked good. Rimmed out. It was a really good looking shot. But this game today, it really summed up where the Knicks are at, right? Like I said before, they're the ultimate try hard team. They have to play with energy. They have to play with effort. They have to rebound. And they're just too reliant on Julius Randle. Like, he's just not good enough to get them ultimately where they want to go. And you saw it today. Like, he had one stretch in the final 6 minutes of the third quarter where he went 5 for 6 from the field. McMahon was laughing. He got to see the whole Julius Randle experience in New York. The fans are going berserk for him for those 6 minutes. Garden's going crazy. He's 5 of 6. The Knicks storm back in the game. The rest of the game, Julius Randle was 5 for 15. Was not doing the right things defensively, was not rebounding, was all over the place. And when he plays like that, they're just not that good. And like, that's the barometer of their whole team.
Before that little hot streak, he goes up for a shot and you just kind of hear this like groan, like this consensus groan from the crowd. It was, look, I mean, it's pretty obvious statement to say that the Knicks are a star away from being a real serious threat. And, you know, we'll see what stars are available. We'll see how aggressive they are.
Well, and you saw on Friday, even though they didn't win, you saw Jimmy Butler on the other side, obviously took them down in the playoffs. You saw Devin Booker today. Like, for as great as Jalen Brunson is, and he's great, he's not that level guy. And that's what they're missing. Like you said, they're just so obviously short that guy you're putting on the marquee, and it's like, this is the guy that we're going to in these kind of situations. They just don't have that guy. It's why their offense isn't where it really needs to be in those situations, and why they have to, you know, it's why Tom Thibodeau after the game is talking about their energy and their effort and their rebounding, because like, that's, they have to win games like that. They're not going to win games where they just out talent people.
Well, and that's why, like, look, there's the next blockbuster, depending on what your definition is, there's a decent chance that the Knicks are the one who are making the deal. Saw a bunch of them this summer, including the Suns, and the Beal is a worrisome return so far, despite the team success. And, you know, I would say mixed results on the summer blockbuster so far around the league. Wendy, you're on mute, brother.
I am on mute. Sorry. I was going to say Brunson, by the way, is shooting 47% on threes this season, up well he's been over great. His career average. And he's doing it on almost 7 a game, which is also a career high. So he's getting that done. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned the blockbusters. If we go back, you know, we're about 20% of the way into the season. The Beal trade is it incomplete right now? I mean, you can say it's troublesome, but I mean, you can't even really evaluate it at this point that the Suns made. Obviously, the Bucks made, you know, one of the biggest trades we've seen in, you know, even this recent history of trades. That was big.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. The Bucks are winning, but they're not being impressive.
No.
And they just lost in Boston the other night. Dame is without question having an impact. I don't have the numbers updated to this moment through today, but I looked a couple days ago and the Bucks last year were the number 21 offense.
Here we go, McMahon. We're going to the clutch. Going to the clutch stats. Ryan's getting in his bag.
Dame time. Number, bag.
They were number 21 in fourth quarter offense. Not just clutch time.
No.
Fourth quarter.
Oh, expanding.
And as of a couple of days ago, they were number 2. I will look it up and verify it here in a second.
In the clutch, right in the clutch this season, as of now, the Bucks 7-2, second in offense, second in defense in clutch minutes.
Wow, that's second in defense is interesting.
It's in a very small
amount. Well,
even by clutch numbers.
Same. I'm just wondering what they're like. How much is Beasley playing in those situations? Is what I'm wondering.
There. Well, they've also had a lot of these games against very bad teams. I mean, that's like the thing. Today. They have like today. Well,
that's the thing. Their schedule's been favorable so far, and they've piled up a bunch of wins. But like today, they were down 26 points, and you come away saying,
to the Portland
"Wow,
Trailblazers."
Right.
As I said to McMahon earlier today,
at home, by the way, at home,
it's much more worrisome or troublesome that you were down at any point by 26 to Portland than whatever the outcome of the game turned out to be. Like you should not be, if you're the Milwaukee Bucks, you should not be down 26 to Portland at any point.
That said, Dame is giving them what they wanted, which is Dame time. And that has been happening. Also, their offense has plummeted from fourth to in the 20s. Again, I don't have the updated stats to this second after today, but I think they were 21st or
their defense, you mean?
Well, I'm sorry. Their defense has plummeted from fourth to
20th in defense.
Okay. So, and by the way, their fourth quarter defense was about the same. It was like almost exactly the same as their overall ranking. It was like 21st or 22nd a couple of days ago. So they've almost exactly flopped. They used to have the fourth best fourth quarter defense as well. And now they got the 20 something fourth quarter defense. They used to have the 21st fourth quarter offense. Now they got the second fourth quarter offense. So the Dame swap out has worked exactly what we thought it would. It increased their offensive floor and lowered their defensive floor.
Mm-hmm.
They're 12-5. They're 12-5.
By the way,
I mean, that's a very good record.
Clutch scoring, Damian Lillard has 56 points this year. Next most on the team is Giannis with 19. Matter of fact, if I was better at math, I could tell you if he's outscored every other buck combined during the clutch, but that'll take me a minute.
Yeah. Well, Middleton
56
was a guy...
to 55. He's outscored every other, all of his teammates combined in the clutch.
Well, look, Middleton hasn't played that much, and Middleton was their clutch guy. So he's, you know, but he was their clutch guy because it was kind of sometimes hard to go to Giannis.
Yeah. And by the way, Beasley is ranked fourth on that team in clutch minutes. Looking at that, he's just above Jay Crowder, which is a reminder he's playing out of necessity, Beasley, in those situations, not because they want him to, because Middleton's been unavailable, whether he's been sidelined altogether or just on a minutes restriction in some situations. Crowder's out for a while. I think there's not a championship ceiling on this team if Malik Beasley's playing major minutes and closing games. He might be the worst defensive starter in the NBA.
Well, he's playing. He's going to be playing a lot of minutes and closing a lot of games, and has been the whole time. I mean, this is the problem.
Starter in the NBA.
I mean, you could argue that the guy playing next to him is in the same category.
He's certainly the worst defensive non-star starter in the NBA.
I'd
have to think about it. But either way, he's not good on defense. There's no arguing that. And yeah, I mean, look, you look at the team they're competing with, the Celtics. I mean, they're in the top five in defense, or in the top 10 in offense. Like that's the sort of ballpark you're supposed to be in if you're a title contending team. And the Bucks, you know, to this point have not looked like a team that's going to be able to guard at a high level. And that's with Giannis basically playing, and with Brook Lopez playing as well as he has, you know, in a long time. And he's been playing well for a long time. Like he was the reason that they were competitive in the Boston game. He looked like 2013 Brook in the paint again. You know, so yeah, it's been a concerning start. Bucks have had the sixth easiest schedule in the league, and that was, I believe, before today's game against Portland, who obviously is not going to raise your strength of schedule at this point. And yes, they have got these wins. They have filed them up. That is good, but they have not been very convincing in doing it. And, you know, certainly when they played the Celtics the other day, yes, the Celtics sort of turned off down the stretch and that game got a little closer than it should have, but you didn't come away from that game thinking Milwaukee is going to be able to go toe to toe with them in a series. At least I didn't. Unless some things change on their end.
Well, they're going to have to get significantly better defensively. Middleton's durability concerns are alarming.
Achilles soreness now causing him to miss a game and a half now and probably longer that's not a great thing to hear for a guy with a bunch of leg injuries either.
Yeah, and then offensively, I think the one thing that I really misjudged was how I thought it was going to be just a really easy fit with Giannis and Dame, just looking at their skill sets and how they would complement and enhance each other. It hasn't been just, you know, easy like that. It hasn't, it's not like they just, you know, okay, hey, boom, here we go. I still think those guys are going to be an awesome offensive duo. And by that, I mean like playing off of each other. But that's not what's happening to this point right now.
By the way, it's Malik Beasley's birthday today.
Well, sorry,
I can't
Malik.
Believe that you call him one of the worst. He turned 27 years old today, and for his 27th birthday, you called him the worst off the defensive starting player in the NBA. I just want
you
to know
when Von Timps takes me to one of these city slicking bars, then we'll have a toast to him. How's that?
Hey. Bontemps, just get him liquored up a little bit and start trying to make $1,000 bets with him, because apparently that's when it happens.
I don't drink liquor.
I don't have to get McMahon liquored up to take money off him in bets. So
no, there's not going to be. Listen, there's not going to be Devin Booker assist total type of beers. It's going to be one or two and off to sleep we go.
It's a late night because he took so long writing his story.
Well, listen, some of us are professionals and care about the words we slap on a page.
So I think if you combine the Porzingis Drew Holiday trades, that definitely counts as a blockbuster for the Celtics.
I'd say so separately. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a pretty high standard for the term blockbuster. I'll just say I see these things get called blockbuster trades, and they're like with, you know,
third level saying players. When the Bulls eventually move off of Zach LaVine, that will not qualify.
Well, depends on who's in the deal, but probably. But
sir, you anyway, think the returns can be a blockbuster? Come on.
I'm just saying I don't know what I don't know. But you know, obviously the Celtics.
I know. I know. Yeah, I know. It won't be a blockbuster.
The Celtics beat the Hawks on Sunday by 10. Porzingis has been terrific. He is out right now for a short, hopefully short time with a calf injury. Also, Drew Holiday has been out with an ankle injury. Did he play?
He did not play. Delano Banton started. Our pal Abby Chin from AC Boston, I checked with her to see exactly what Joe Mazzulla said, which was just that he will be checked out in a week. But sounds like he got an MRI. It sounds like it was a minor deal.
Porzingis
from his standpoint. Yeah, Porzingis, not Drew Holiday. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Drew could be back pretty soon here. And yeah, they've looked really good. I mean, they've had a couple hiccup games. Obviously, they had a rough second half and lost to Orlando in the in-season tournament on Friday. We'll talk about the Magic in a little bit. But I think so far, if you're the Celtics or a Celtics fan, you got to feel really good about the way the first month of the season has gone. Chemistry there has been great. These guys are all on the same page about how this is going to go. Porzingis has been in a fantastic mood the whole time. I think he's fit in great there. We were talking about during the game. I think he really is comfortable being in Boston, being in back in the limelight again after being in purgatory the last 18 months in Washington, and in particular how he got sent to Washington, where it was a couple of not great contracts going to Dallas, and Dallas even sent a second round pick to the Wizards in the deal. Like, I think, you know, getting out of that situation and now being able to choose to go to the Celtics on a great team that's got a chance to win, he has seemed really energized from the moment camp started. And Drew Holiday has fit in seamlessly. He and Derek White might be the two best. We talked about the worst defensive guard before Malik Beasley. Derek White and Drew Holiday might be the two best defensive guards in the league, and they're playing together on the Celtics. So, like, this team is in, I think, really good shape. And if they could keep those six guys healthy, they're going to be awfully tough to beat for anybody next spring.
Well, just think about today. I mean, the Hawks are a potent, you know, reasonably a team that you can't mess around with.
They're really damn good offensive team.
Second in the league to the Pacers, in part because Trae Young, they played one of the most absurd games of all time last Tuesday in the in-season tournament.
Right. Well, Trae Young hasn't had the best shooting season, but he's having a very good year, and he had a very good game today. And they have a lot of depth. But, you know, the Celtics are missing two guys who could be all-stars this year, and they, you know, win by 10.
And by the way, Derek White had 15 points, 11 assists, 3 steals, plus 29 in a game they won by 10.
I wonder if he should be an NBA rank next year.
I would say he probably should be.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
All right. Speaking of the team that beat them on Friday, the Orlando Magic. The Orlando Magic won today for their 7th consecutive win. It's the longest winning streak they've had since the 2010-11 season.
Wow.
A lot has changed since then.
Like, that's a stat that you hear and you're like, okay, well, how long was winning streak? 12, 17, 11? No, 7. That said, I'm not taking anything away from them. We'll see where the numbers shake out. Again, I don't have the exact up-to-date stats.
I have them right here. What do you want?
Well, coming into today, the Houston Rockets, McMahon, were the number one defensive team in the league.
So the Rockets, Magic today.
The Rockets and Wolves are tied for the top defense in the league, and the Magic at 106.8, and the Magic are at 107 flat, two-tenths of a point per 100 possessions back.
All right, well, a couple of things about the Magic. We very rarely talk about, but they have demanded our attention at 12-5, seven consecutive wins. They are missing two starters. Wendell Carter has a foot injury, and Markelle Fultz has been out, I think, 8 or 9 games. He has not played in this win streak. Neither is Wendell Carter. So that's two of their starters they're missing during this streak. By the way, their next two games are with the Wizards. I don't want to make any assumptions, but their next two games are against a team with a 9-game losing streak. So they have a chance to extend this.
Certainly more. Should be a 9-game winning streak if they're serious about taking a step forward this year.
As a side note, Lonzo Ball, not Lonzo Ball.
LaMelo
Ball got injured again today with a foot injury and couldn't put any weight on his foot as he was coming off the court, which last year, you remember, he had a series of ankle injuries that basically derailed his whole season.
Well, this is the same ankle that he had surgery on, ended his season last year, and he was late even getting started in training camp when they landed on. So certainly, hope that LaMelo's ankle isn't too bad, but that was a rough-looking injury tonight.
When you watch it, it doesn't look like a normal ankle turn. He almost sort of twists his foot.
So they called it a right ankle strain. That was a little concerning to me.
Yeah, I don't know, but he literally had to be carried off the court. So that was upsetting, obviously, if you're a LaMelo or Hornets fan. Anyway, so the Magic have defended very well. They're on this winning streak without two of their starters. But one of the things that's been impressive to me is they have a very focused offense attack. They go at the paint. They are in the top 5 in paint scoring. I think they hit over 70 points in the paint today, although Charlotte's defense is horrible. They get contributions from up and down the lineup. When they beat the Celtics the other day, it was Mo Wagner who had 27 points. They got 30 points from Cole Anthony off the bench today. Paolo Banchero has, I think, scored over 20 in like 5 or 6 consecutive games. He's having a very strong second season and filling up the stat sheet. Today, he had 23, 7, and 8. Franz Wagner had 30 today. Jalen Suggs is playing very well defensively.
Suggs is also hitting 36% of his threes on 4 a game. Suggs is shooting 36% or better from 3. The Magic are going to be cooking with gas because Jalen Suggs is a fantastic defensive player. And if he can hit anywhere near that kind of rate consistently going forward, he is turning into a heck of a player.
Here's how good of a defensive player Jamal Mosley thinks Jalen Suggs is. And obviously, I know Mosley well from his time in Dallas. Knew we were going to talk about him, so I gave Mosley a call today. Said Suggs is all defensive first team, in his opinion. He says I'm just saying, like try to do a little bit of homework. You guys might want to.
Well, I had breakfast with Jamal Mosley in Abu Dhabi, and we talked about their pick and roll defense. I'm just kidding. I mean, I did.
Anyways. He said he reminds me of Gary Payton, of Marcus Smart, or a young Pat Bev, nothing short of elite. And, Gary Payton, Marcus Smart, the last two guards to win Defense Player of the Year. That's the people he's putting Suggs in a conversation with. And, Mosley is obviously just, he doesn't want to get wrapped up in wins and losses because...
Me either.
Well, listen... Understandably for him, though, because this is still very early in they're kind of past the rebuild part. And now they're in the building part, right? They've got
phase 2.
I was going to say we're in phase 2. Hey,
phase 2. These phase 2 defenses.
They might be in phase 3, though, because they're really good.
Yeah.
They might have skipped a phase.
But you look at this roster. There are two guys in the roster who are older than 26. Gary Harris and Joe Ingles, who basically is like a coach on the floor.
When they signed Joe Ingles, I was like, really? Why?
Because they want that kind of like IQ, competitive character. They want a vet for 20-year-old Anthony Black to look at, for even 21-year-old Paolo Banchero, 22-year-old Franz Wagner, 22-year-old Jalen Suggs, 23-year-old Cole Anthony. I mean, like, it's a super young team. And the thing that Mosley is just ecstatic about, he feels like these guys care about winning, high IQ, and like they have bought into let's be an awesome defensive team. And it's one thing for like a Jalen Suggs or you know, even an Anthony Black. He says Anthony Black is 6'8 without the hair, but he thinks Anthony Black can be like, he basically says he does some things defensively I haven't seen before. Like, they've got some guys who are just stud defenders, but look, Franz Wagner wasn't considered any kind of like when he was in the draft process, his defense was a concern. The biggest concern about Paolo Banchero was what positions is he going to guard? And both of those guys have worked to become guys who you can, you know, you can be switchy with. Like, they've embraced being these multi-position defenders. And I, like, honestly, the numbers with Paolo and Franz on the floor together offensively this year aren't great. And so I was kind of asking, like, hey, you know, what do you think about that? And he kept going back to like, dude, are you seeing the way these guys are buying in on defense? Like, they care about winning. I don't care what the, you know, small sample size offensive numbers say, essentially. He does like the way that they communicate, the way they're kind of, he gave me an example of like down the stretch of their win against Denver, where they run a same play for Franz a couple times. It works. And then he says to Paolo, hey, they're going to guard it this way. Let's run this counter. Boom, bucket for Paul. So he likes the way they're communicating, talking to each other. Tonight they combined for 50 points and 9 assists. Now it was against the Charlotte Hornets, but still. But again, to get two potential star type of players to care that much about defense at that young of an age, that's pretty significant.
Yeah, he's done an awesome job with that group top to bottom. You mentioned how young the team is. Like, Goga Batadze is a former first round pick by the Pacers.
Yeah.
Walked off the scrap heap. Wendell Carter Jr., you know, they get off to this good start. Wendell Carter Jr. hurts his hand. Like, yeah. Oh man, that stinks. Magic probably.
Oh, I said his foot. I was his hand. I'm sorry.
And he's got a hand issue. And you're like, oh, you know, it's probably going to be a little bit of a bump in the road for them. And he's got Goga Batadze in the lineup playing great. Like, he's done a great job coaching up these young guys, getting them to buy in on defense, getting them to play together and hard. And I mean, it's just, it's been really fun to watch. And just the last few days, they take out the Celtics on Friday. Yeah. They play Denver at home. You know, obviously Denver's been scuffling lately, but still got the defending champs in Nikola Jokic, and they go down the stretch and beat them. Suggs gets into it with Jokic when they're both going for a loose ball and jumps up and is screaming at the crowd. Like, it's been a really fun team to watch, and to see a young group like this, especially as you said, Brian, I mean, this team has been irrelevant basically from the moment they traded Dwight Howard until now. And it's been,
they eked into the back end of the playoffs a couple of years ago, but they were,
those teams were irrelevant. Yeah, I mean, the only relevant thing about those Magic teams were they were the ones playing the Bucks when the Bucks didn't play the game in the bubble. That's like the most relevant thing the Magic have been involved in since.
Remember that. You were there. I didn't remember that.
And then credit to the Magic and you know, their front office, they realized, hey, the ceiling for that edition of the Magic was first round exit, and they blew it up. They got a phenomenal return for Vucevic. You know, I don't think they got a great return for Aaron Gordon before that, but they are still owed a pick from, I think it's, starts in 2025, top five protected from Denver. But
They got RJ Hampton, that deal. That deal didn't work out, but it doesn't matter. They got much in the other trade that it was fine.
Yeah. And that was like, they chose, like, hey, being stuck in the middle is not where we want to be. Let's blow this thing up and start over. Now they've got a really intriguing young core that's proven that they're going to compete. Mosley, the one thing he asked me not to do was to give him too much credit, but I am going to say he absolutely has to be considered an early front runner for Coach of the Year. I mean, are you kidding me? Who had the Orlando Magic?
Not me.
At 12-5.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
look, we thought they'd be a team that if everything broke right, they could push to be in the top half of the play-in mix. And maybe if it all broke right, maybe they could get to sixth. Like, if the young guys all take a step, for them to be, obviously it's early, like you said, but for them to be up there at the top of the Eastern Conference 20% of the way through the season, like, he's done a phenomenal job, especially with the injuries they've had. It's been, it's been super fun.
And it still might, they still could land in that 6, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah, range, that'd be fine.
Be a massive step forward for a young core with a lot of opportunity for growth. And because, listen, Mosley's background, he earned his way in the NBA as a development guy. So, you know, that's still the focus in Orlando.
Yep. So you've Bontemps, you've talked about how cool it is for the in-season tournament that the Pacers are going to advance, and they're going to have a home game in the quarterfinals next week.
I'd be playing Orlando.
Well, here's the thing. So Orlando is actually, it was interesting. So they beat Boston on Friday. That completed their in-season tournament games. And it was funny, like Mo Wagner and Paolo Banchero came to the post-game press conference. I watched it. And they were like, hey, where are we at? Like, I don't know. He said, we were just talking in the locker room. They were all like, wait a minute. We're in good shape here.
They went three and one.
The Celtics and the Nets are behind them. They're both 2-1. And the tiebreaker situation there, the Magic lost to the Nets, beat the Celtics. But the thing about what you're going to hear a lot about in these next few days is point differential, because that's going to be the big tiebreaker.
Tiebreakers tonight, and it was a lot of writing. I think it was 1,600 words.
He did it super fast too. Boy, let me tell you,
I did it faster than you wrote your newser, I bet.
Then you're better prepared to talk about this. But I will say to you that the Magic are at +22, so they're in very good shape to advance.
The Celtics need to beat the Bulls by at least 23 points in their game,
which could happen.
Which could happen. Certainly could happen. But
the Celtics and the Nets,
pretty good shape. Yeah.
In that group, the Celtics and the Nets are still alive. So we'll see what the Magic. I think the Magic are in good shape to advance, but you know, they got some stuff. Let's just go through
phase two. If the Rockets win in Dallas, which may or may not have their
Wait, McMahon. We're gonna go through real quick, buddy.
I'm covering group title.
Well, you're jumping on to like West Group B, and I want to start with East Group A.
It's your podcast, so you just tell us what to do,
and I certainly will.
Okay.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I'll get you to that bar in a minute here. Just hold your horses.
I just want one of those autographed cards. I can't believe you sent one to Bontemps and not me.
I did not send it to him.
You could have hand delivered it to me on numerous occasions.
To get this back on track, would you like me to go through the groups and say who is still alive in each
group? Yes. Yes. Go through the groups and tell us. The in-season tournament pool play ends on Tuesday.
And so, all the games, I will say, it's been interesting. I think there's only been one game to once again bag on the Bulls. I think there's been one game of all the group play games that was totally irrelevant, which was the Bulls Raptors game on Friday, which ironically led to DeMar getting ejected because he was mad about Pascal Siakam shooting a three at the end, because the Raptors bench was like, we need to get our point differential higher. And then DeMar got very mad about it.
Darko yells at him, in season tournament.
IST.
And they were already, but the best part was in the afternoon when the Celtics lost, both of them were eliminated from the tournament. So
here's my suggestion. I think teams should practice those meaningless garbage time last second shots for next year's in-season tournament, and the unwritten rule just be smashed into smithereens.
As a total aside, before I run through this, it has been interesting because point differentials has never been a thing anyone's talked about before. It has made the end of these games much more interesting having this. I think it's something that the NBA might want to consider as a tiebreaker going forward.
People talk about point differential. You know who talks about it? Gamblers.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's the spread, but I just mean in general, like if teams have to play to the end of these games more often, like it would potentially make the end of games a little more interesting, even if
you're saying sprinkle it in as a tiebreaker.
By the way, the most dominant team in the IST so far has been the Lakers, and their point differential was Their point differential was +74.
I got a better way to sum that up. So the Lakers, as you said, they're almost certainly going to be the number one seed. They're almost certainly going to play the Suns in a rematch in the wildcard game in LA the quarterfinal game on the 4th or 5th. The only way that won't happen is if the Kings beat the Warriors. Kings are 3-0. Kings would have to win that game by 46 points to be ahead of the Lakers. That's how dominant in terms of point differential and how much they rolled through the group. That's how good the Lakers were. But East Group A, you said the Pacers, they're 4-0. Tyrese Haliburton will be hosting a quarterfinal game. We'll get to play on TNT for the first time. That's done. Brian's favorite team, Northeast Ohio's own, Cleveland Cavaliers. They are 2-1. They are plus 6 point differential. They got to win by a good amount against the Atlanta Hawks, probably, to have a chance to advance.
They're not playing great right now. And Donovan Mitchell's playing through an injury, and he's not played good the last few games. They did beat the Raptors Sunday.
Yeah, won a competitive game. In Group B, Bucks are 3-0. Playing the
76ers
Heat.
Have been eliminated, by the way.
Eliminated. Yes, they have. Everybody else in the group is eliminated. Bucks and Heat play in Milwaukee on Tuesday. Bucks are 3-0. Heat are 2-1. All three teams with the Knicks. Knicks are playing the Hornets, probably without LaMelo, at the Garden. Bucks currently have very high point differential. Bucks win, they'll be the first seed. If all three teams end up tied, well, there's point differential basically to determine it. But if the Knicks win by a lot against the Hornets, one way or the other, the Knicks have a very good chance of making it into the knockout round, either as the division winner or as a wild card team.
Yeah, that Jimmy Butler three that you mentioned earlier that could have gone or not at the Garden was a Friday night.
Yeah,
that very well could determine the spot totally. In the season tournament.
Well, yeah. and Devin Booker, by the way, banked in a three at the end of Grizzly Suns on Friday night. And Larry Nance had a dunk with 2 seconds to go in their game against the Clippers for the Pelicans.
Pelicans, yeah.
If that shot hadn't gone in, the Pelicans would have the wild card and the Suns would be out. So
running up
the
score
differential thing is
fun. It's like taunting after dunks. More fun is better for everybody.
Yeah.
Less hurt by hanging on the rim because there's been a whole bunch of hanging on the rim.
We got to get
I told you my 3 second rule. 3 seconds after you dunk the ball, you can do whatever the hell you want as long as your pants stay.
It might be the best idea you've ever had, McMahon.
We got to get rid of this. We got to get rid of this hanging on the rim thing. It's stupid. There's been 1,000 texts for it. Group C, we talked about it some. Magic plus 22, already done at 3-1. Celtics play the Bulls. Nets play the Raptors. Bottom line is both those teams have to win by a lot to have a chance to advance. If they both don't, Orlando's got a good chance to advance. They all beat each other. So if Boston loses to Chicago, there's a chance that Brooklyn could just win the group if they win, but we don't need to get into all that. Talk about the Lakers. They're 4-0. They're going to be posting a quarterfinal game. Unless the Wolves win by 38 against the Thunder, which I think is unlikely, though it's possible, I guess. And if the Warriors beat the Kings by 30, also probably not going to happen. Phoenix will be playing the Lakers in the one quarterfinal. McMahon said it earlier. Rockets in Dallas, right, McMahon?
Yes, sir.
Tuesday.
Mavericks
Rockets
are out.
In Dallas.
Mavericks
Tuesday
are out.
Night. Mavericks are out. But the Rockets.
I don't know if we're going to see their in-season tournament court. It's the one that has not been used.
Yeah, we'll see. A lot of drama there.
The only drama for the Dallas side of it.
Well, and
although Luka
Rockets,
got banged up, is Luka going to play in that game?
Ohm wrote on that. X-rays negative. Source told Ohm that he's good. It's his left thumb. He's played through worse.
So if the Rockets win that game, they beat the Pelicans. So the Rockets will be in the quarterfinals. If the Rockets lose, the Pelicans will win the group and they'll be in the quarterfinals. And then in the final group, West Group C, Sacramento's 3-0. They're hosting the Warriors. Rematch of what was a great series last year. And I think I'm pretty sure these teams already had one game come down to a Steph shot this year, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah, the Warriors beat them by a point earlier this month at home. So that game is in Sac.
If the Kings win, that was Clay's game winner.
Oh, that was right. That's right. Clay. Yeah. Clay went around. Clay hit the jumper in the lane. So the Kings are hosting the Warriors. Kings win that game, they'll win the group and they'll host a quarterfinal game. If the Warriors win and Minnesota loses to Oklahoma City, Golden State will win the group in advance. And if all three teams win, again, it comes down to point differential. So we'll see how all that shakes out.
The Timberwolves are not in the greatest shape.
The Timberwolves have to win by a bunch.
The Timberwolves must have had a bad in-season tournament loss that I'm not aware of, because they're 2-1, but they've got a negative point differential. So that hurts them in terms of advancing.
They lost on Friday. They played the Kings, and they lost by 13.
That was where they had their that was where they
Give us your BPIST bond temps projected in season tournament quarterfinals.
That's a good question.
BPIST, so I like that. Be pissed.
It's good you figured that out on the fly. Pacers obviously are in. I feel pretty confident the Knicks are going to be in. The Knicks obviously, especially with this LaMelo injury, if they take care of business against Charlotte, it's going to be pretty difficult without getting into all the machinations about the tiebreaker stuff. It's going to be pretty difficult for them to be in a spot where it's going to be pretty difficult for them to be in a spot where they're not going to get in. So I'll say the Knicks get in, and I'll say the Bucks probably get in one way or the other, either as a wild card or as the other team. And I think Orlando's going to get in. I think Orlando will win. Because if the Celtics, let's say the Celtics win by 35 against Chicago, it won't matter if the Nets lose to the Raptors at home. And I think Toronto probably would win that game, if I had to guess. So if I'm picking there, I'd say probably Orlando. So that's what? Orlando, New York, Milwaukee, and Indiana. And then Western Conference, I would say, obviously the Lakers and Suns are going to be playing in the one game. Probably better question for you. Do you think Houston's going to win in Dallas or not?
What's Houston's road record?
It is 0-something. 0-5. So,
I'm not going to predict that the Rockets – I have to deal with people in Dallas too much to say the Rockets are going to get their first road win of the season.
It would be fun if they came in. I mean, look, that's going to be fun either way. You either get this fun Rockets team in phase two, Rocket and Roland, or you get Zion and the Pelicans, who played really well. Rockets had a huge comeback a couple weeks ago I believe that game was in New Orleans. I don't remember if it was in New Orleans or Houston, but.
And then you're guaranteed to have some star power, assuming it's Lakers.
Well, it was not in New Orleans. I'll tell you that right now.
Was it in Houston, that comeback game? That's right. Damn, I'm an idiot. Yeah. They haven't won on the road yet. So they had a huge comeback down the stretch in Houston. Fred VanVleet hit a bunch of threes, stole that game. Otherwise, Pelicans might have been hosting a quarterfinal for sure. And then, I think Golden State, I'm going to guess Golden State beats Sacramento and gets that other division.
McMahon, do you think Jason Kidd gives the Mavericks a pep talk before the game? Like, come on, guys. I know it's November 28th. You can do it. Keep these Rockets out of the in-season tournament quarterfinals on three, team.
Actually, you know what? I'm gonna revise that. The reason I say that, I'm going to say Sacramento's going to win because I'm pretty sure I saw that Mike Brown talk to these guys about the money that they can win and that like what's available here and that like they're trying to win these games.
So well, there's also this factor. Mike Brown enjoyed his guest appearance on the Hoop Collective so much that he's heard that we've got a live show on Friday. And I bet you that if the Kings are in the mix, I bet you we got a decent shot of getting Mike Brown to come on up and say hi again.
That would be great.
But no, I think Jay Kidd's much more focused on the Texas State Championship. But I tell you what, if the Mavericks could win themselves a Texas State Championship that year, then you got some bragging rights.
Listen,
the two horse race this year.
It was a one horse race last year. None of them made the playoffs. That's all you got to know about that. But hey, listen, it is what it is. All right. Well, we'll get some IST action on Tuesday and we'll see, how that shakes out. Thank you for that comprehensive report. You educated me, Bontemps. Information.
Well, it's too complicated. The problem with only having four games is there's not enough time to separate these teams. So it gets pretty insane from a tiebreaker standpoint pretty fast.
Bontemps does a lot of math quickly too. I mean, it takes me a while to add up to 55. He's doing all this stuff.
Yeah, but this is kind of what you want. It's kind of if you have the Bucks and the Lakers and the Magic and the Pacers.
Yeah.
Oh, I think kinda, it's been great. I think
it's kind of what you're looking for, right?
Isn't that totally? Yeah. I think it's been great.
And like we talked about before, like it can be a great showcase for like a young star, like a Halliburton or a Paolo or a De'Aaron Fox. But then, let's be honest, you want a LeBron or a Book KD or a Giannis Dame. Like you need some old established star power there too to draw the eyeballs.
Yeah, and look, if the Knicks make it in, that'd be like it would be awesome for the Knicks to be, quite frankly, to be in it.
Totally. Hey, they've got plenty of room for banners in that arena. I was there today.
Look, you got a guarantee of having LeBron or KD in Vegas, which is great for the league. You've got a really good shot at having
Booker. Tyrese Halliburton. Excuse me, sir. Booker is one putting together the MVP campaign.
Booker is great too. I just meant like you're having.
I know. I'm teasing.
Big stars there. You got Halliburton hosting first ever game on TNT. Got a chance for the league's most exciting offense and flammable defense to be in Vegas putting on a show, which would be great.
Rick Carlisle's facial expressions.
You've got in that Sacramento, Golden State, Minnesota division, you're going to get either Steph or Edwards or De'Aaron Fox in this thing. You could get Zion in it. You know, we've talked a ton about Şengün on this pod. You get a guy like him in this tournament. It would be great.
I don't think Şengün's going to draw eyeballs.
No, but I do think that for a league that's trying, like this whole thing, let's be honest, it's a marketing thing, right?
Yeah.
You're going to get a chance to, it's going to be a nice mix, well, almost certainly, of young, exciting teams and established stars, which I think is great. I think it's been a fun thing.
All right.
And now we get a live show out of it too. Live show in Vegas.
All right.
December 8th.
Maybe February 2. Who knows? I think February 8th is the trade deadline. All right, gentlemen. Off to the adult establishment. Thank you for listening.
We're going to collective. No, don't say it like that. Don't. No, sir. IT department does not want to hear that phrasing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Off to the...
going to a bar.
Yes.
I believe only adults are allowed. All right. Thank you to Jackson for producing. Thank you to McMahon and Bontemps. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective. We'll be back talking to you in a couple days when we'll have some IST information for you.
Adios, amigos.